As a homeowner, I can't help myself. I'm always thinking about fixing this and changing that. For the money, for the beauty, for the knowledge and the peace of mind. It's about time for the Love My Renovation Project with Mike Young.
Renovation projects with your 1 to 4 unit properties. So if you've got a house that needs renovation or you're going through a renovation now, you may have questions. Feel free to call in and ask those questions. If you want to be part of the show, call us at 888-627-6008, toll free, and be part of the show. So if you have a problem with a renovation project, whether it may be a big problem or a little one, we've found over the years, last couple of years, we've been running a company called 203K911, where we have been able to help over 400 people so far. And only, I guess, 99% of them were helped without any fees. 99%, no fees, just help. So we're happy to help where we can, show you how to take it from there. In any case, we do love our renovation projects for the most part. Most of them are very smooth and happen without a hitch. Some of them have problems. Problems usually are a lack of communication between the borrower and contractor. Quite often the homeowner will assume that the consultant or inspector is the job superintendent, and that is never a fact. We'll get into that a little bit later in the show. But today I wanted to hit on a first couple of things. It's some emails we got from consultants around the country. One of them was about the contingency money. Contingency money is built into every renovation project or every contractor's bid. And it is money set aside just in case we run into a problem. Contractors do not like to come back to you if there's a small problem and ask for more money. It's a bad feeling that you get that they're nickel and diming you. And in fact, that's likely not the case. So contingency money is built into every renovation loan. It's usually about 10%. It can be 15 or 20. I've had some lenders that are doing the home style loan and say it has to be 10%. No option. I have other lenders on a home style loan that say 15 is called for because the utilities are off. So every lender is different. Each one has his own supplemental requirements and little things that they will do to make them unique in the business. So contingency, in this case, the question was, does the $6,000 contingency money that's left over go towards the loan, or can it be a check that gets mailed to the borrower after the final inspection? Well, that's a good question. What is it? It's money just in case you run into a problem, but if it's not needed, the guideline says it will be paid down on the mortgage. So it does not go back to the client normally. If it's not used, it just pays down on the mortgage and lowers the amount of money they owe on the mortgage, which means that their loan, instead of being paid off in 30 years, might be paid off in 28 years or some other number of years. But back to the question, can we get a check for the unused contingency? The short answer is no. You can get reimbursed if you've been buying things for the house that are fixtures, not curtains for the kitchen, but if you have light fixtures or chandelier or something that you picked up for the house that becomes part of the real property, you can get reimbursed. You can get reimbursed. We can also use that money now. Once 90% of the work is completed and there's still contingency reserve there, and you want to do something else to enhance the value of your property, then you might very well do that, as long as the item you're adding can return dollar for dollar in the appraised value for what it is you're doing, if that makes any sense. So typically you're not going to get a cash for that contingency. You can either use it up or pay it down on your mortgage. But there is one case where you can get paid that money, and that is if you put the money up front as the contingency. So when I have a client that takes their contingency, they want to get in for as little as possible. They want to put 3.5% down on this FHA 203K loan. But I know from their talking that they're going to be doing some additional work. Well, why not do that additional work in the scope and put that money down as additional money down and earmark it for contingency? By doing so, if it's not used at the end of the project, they can get it back as long as they're putting the contingency money up in cash. They can get it back at the end of the program. Okay, that was one email we got requesting after our last show from a consultant in Missouri, actually. So the next one that I got came in, said, I have a project that will have two contractors on it. Lordy, lordy, lordy. I hated to hear that. He wanted to know, how do I separate the draw request so that each can sign their own work and each get their own check? Well, number one, you don't want any projects with more than one general contractor on it. Now, if this is a limited 203K, they have the ability to take up to five subcontractors. In other words, you're going to have a window guy, maybe a roof guy, a plumber, possibly, and so forth. So those cases, a limited can have up to five subcontractors, but a full 203K should only have one. But this guy said, Mike, we have a septic system to replace. It's $35,000. A general contractor puts his normal markup of 20% on that, 10% labor, 10% overhead. Then that's $7,000 more that the client has to borrow to cover that. So the lender has asked us to do two separate contracts with one for each contractor, showing just what that contractor is going to do. Well, this is a unique to our software only. And this fellow was a software user for us. And all you had to do was go to the configuration tab in that project and click limited 203K. Once you do that and save it, you can go back and select two contractors. And when you get to the bid specifications, you're going to notice something has changed. Every line item that has work in it or doesn't have work in it is going to have the ability for you to check which contractor is going to do that line item. So in the plumbing section, you may have contractor A putting in the septic system. And you might have contractor B also in that same section, but he's putting in a new water heater. And that's perfectly possible with our software for consultants. We're not going to get into that any more than that. But why would you really want more than one contractor? Years ago, we had a project in North Carolina where the borrower insisted that the lender accept two general contractors, and it turned out to be the longest 203K project ever done by our lender. They realized very quickly how that was a big mistake and they would never do it again. Neither one of those contractors wanted to start the job until the other contractor was off the job, finished with his portion. So month after month went by and many calls before they finally admitted why they were weren't starting the project. The borrower ended up telling one of the contractors that the other one was terminated and to please get out here and do your job. They did, and a month later, the other contractor was called out to complete their job. What a nightmare. A lot of wasted time, a lot of, there's no reason to do a draw if nothing has happened. But this guy was violating the guideline over and over again. So remember, if you're doing a limited 203K, you can have up to 5 subcontractors, but don't give yourself that extra headache. If you're going out to do a draw inspection and you've got 2 contractors, that means you have 2 people to do a draw for. So you're going to meet them at the same time, get them to sign their part of the contract or the draw request form, and then you're going to bring the other one out and talk to the other contractor. But, Lord, as a consultant, you're only going to get paid 1. I doubt very seriously if they're both going to pay you for your trip out there. It's just extra work for you. So I cannot recommend that you have more than 1 contractor on the job. And having said that, I've also done it before when it's not too much trouble, but it's still a headache. And I've done it in the same situation where we have a septic system being replaced, and those can range anywhere from $15,000 to $39,000 or $40,000 in most cases. We had 1 septic system that had to be imported from Saudi Arabia because they couldn't get the soil to perk. And Saudi Arabia engineers had developed this hillside septic leach field that run down the hill. So it worked out for the client, but it was $73,000. Okay, getting back to today's main topic. Every lender gets asked, why am I paying a consultant $700 or $1,000 or more? Why am I doing that? What am I going to get for that? Well, if you're a lender listening to the show today and you want a sample of our report to give them, to show them when they ask that question, feel free to ask for it. Just send me an email at mike@my203kconsultant.com, and we'll be happy. In fact, call it report@my203kconsultant.com, and we'll send you that report. Be sure and send all your information because we're going to plug that in for you so that this thing looks like something that came out of your office as well. But that is a good question and should be pretty much the same from every consultant that you might hire, but in reality, that couldn't be farther from the truth. I'm going to recite a part of the guideline here. Every consultant should provide an inspection report that must also state this is not a home inspection, as it doesn't follow the same rules. It's more of a contractor's inspection to see what condition everything is and report on that before the work is done and what needs to be repaired. When HUD required all 203K consultants to become home inspectors, or if they're a general contractor, engineer, architect, then they're okay too. But it forced a lot of us to become home inspectors that may not have been a home inspector before. Well, in doing so, it created a real problem in the industry because most states, all but Florida, to my knowledge, forbid us to put bids or tell how much it's going to cost to make a repair. That's the difference. A consultant is going to create an independent inspection of the property and help you develop a scope of work. And with that scope of work, he's going to create that bid specification. He's got to make a bid. Okay, now Boy, this today is really flying by. I want to say we're going to be right back after a short break. And if you want to call in after that, dial 888-627-6008, toll free, and be part of the program. We love it when you have your input. Makes the program more interesting. So we'll be right back after a short break.
.com. If you're having issues with your renovation project, we may be able to assist you. It's nice to know you have a knowledgeable person on your side. We recently had a client that had a lender telling them that the problem wasn't theirs, but it was the correspondent lender's. Ultimately, they agreed it was their problem and remedied the issue quickly. Most issues have been handled without a fee. Visit 203K911.com now and let's fix your problems.
Hey, this is Mike Young. We're back with you. Be sure to call in at 888-627-6008, toll free to be part of the program. We were talking about what does a consultant do for the payment that they're going to receive? Well, the primary service of a consultant is to assist the client in creating a scope of work that includes correcting all of the minimum property standard violations. They're all related to health and safety and so forth, and whatever else the borrower wants to add in addition that become the bid process. They become the bid request for the project. The consultant is supposed to create an independent project bid on their own without the assistance of a contractor bid. That's correct. Now you know, now that you know that, what percentage do you think actually do that? Well, that's a good question. If I had to make a guess, I would think that it's less than 50%. I believe that less than 50% of the consultants out there are doing their job according to the HUD guideline. I've run into one recently that I hired, sent him out to do a job as an independent contractor, and I got reamed. My lender client said, "What? We don't have a bid yet. It's been 2 weeks. We don't even have a bid yet from the consultant." So when I investigated, it's a shame to let it go that far. We normally provide a bid within 4 to 5 days. One of my favorite stories is we put a bid together for a young lady in Marin County, which is a high rent district. And we put it together in 5 days, turned it to her. With a click of the button, we removed the prices and send it out to bid. She said, "Don't send it to anybody. I have a contractor." And I said, "Great, have him fill his prices in here." So we came in at $159,000 in 5 days. Their contractor, her contractor, took 5 weeks to come up with $298,000. At that point, she said, "Oh my God, this job is great. This project is very viable at $159,000, but it cannot happen at $298,000. I just don't qualify to borrow that much more money." So I said, "Well, let's just get another bid." And she said, "Oh, fine. Well, bring somebody you know." And I said, "You know what? At this point, you've lost trust in me. So why don't you find another contractor?" And as I said that, my phone rang and a guy that I'd never heard of asked me, "Hey, is there any chance to get on your bid list?" And I put him on the speaker and I said, "How did you hear about us?" And I quizzed him right in front of this client. And I said, "Have you ever done business with it before?" He said, "No. That's what I'm calling. I want to get on your bid list." And I said, "Do you do work in Marin County. He said, yeah, I can go to Marin County. So we agreed to send him the bid request. He bid the job in about 2 weeks, didn't take him 5 weeks. And he bid it at $161,000. Now, I remind you, my bid was $159,000 independently and done in 5 days. His bid was $161,000. And the first words out of her mouth when I talked to her was, shall we try to talk him down to $159,000? I had to stop her at that point. I said, I don't think that small difference, and that is a small difference. What is it? Less than half of 1%. Let's don't start the relationship off just that way. Let's give him his price. Agree to pay him the 161, and let's get your price moving down, or your project moving up down the road. So it's not always getting a bid fast that's good. The one thing that a consultant is trained in is doing all the trades, do the bids. When I was a child growing up, the only thing that you could get dad to do something with you is to do what he wanted to do. Nothing wrong with that, but he, every night, my dad was a sheet metal contractor, heating and air contractor, and later became a general contractor. But as a heating and air contractor, he was had blueprints spread out all over the living room floor, and he was in the floor and doing takeoffs and, every night when we'd sit there and watch TV right over the top of him. Well, to play with him, I'd jump on him. My brother and I would jump on him a little bit, and he would wrestle me down and say, look, let me show you this. So I started learning how to do takeoffs for heating and air when I was 10 years old or thereabouts. By the time I was 12, I could do the takeoff completely by myself and be darn accurate and do bids for my father. And we did. He would be on one little corner of the living room, and I'd be on another next to him, and we'd be working on two different jobs. And it was kind of fun, and let me do something that my father respected and liked. And it was just one way to spend some quality time, if you would, that actually helped put food on the table for the entire family. So why is it important to have a scope of work nailed down? Well, two things happen. When we provide you that scope of work, now all the contractors that bid that project are actually going to bid that project with the same list in front of them. Because no matter how you try, if you have three contractors out there to do a job, to look at it, and you don't have a written scope of work, the homeowner is going to say, well, I want to fix this, I want to fix that. And for contractor A, they're going to remember, oh, and I want this. Contractor B, they might remember that, but then they might say, oh, I forgot, I want that. So the bids at the end, when they come in, don't have any relationship to each other. I can remember one where we, a contractor that I had very much respect for, submitted his bid, and my bid was $24,000 or thereabouts. Bid number one came in at $24,500. Bid number two at $23,500. But they were sandwiching my bid, which is perfect. I don't mind that at all. But my most respected contractor, and the one that I thought was going to get the job, comes in at $30,000. So I called him up and I said, what the heck's going on? Your bid has no relationship to the rest of these bids or my bid. And we talked and he said, oh, well, you gave me those specifications, but the borrower changed it when I was out there. They added a deck. I said, oh, they did. I want you to redo your bid, keeping only the things in my scope of work in that bid, and then give me a second bid for the deck that she has added, okay? Now, his bid came in at $24,300 or something on that order, making his bid very competitive. But if he hadn't shared that with me, and he hadn't, I would think his bid is just outrageously high and stay away from him. So we got back, got to talk to the homeowner and explain to them you can't give contractors different things to bid on and expect the bids to come in with any kind of uniformity. How do we look at them in all fairness? Now, you're not obligated to take the low bidder. In fact, sometimes the low bidder is not the best bidder. Why is it important for us to give you a bid with numbers in it, a scope of work with our bid in it? Because it empowers the client to have advanced knowledge as to the cost of their project or their project cost prior to getting the contractor bids. Now, our bid is not necessarily the best bid, but it gives you a ballpark figure as to where you think this is going to come in. And now when the bids start coming in and we're at $159 and bid one comes in at $298, you know that bid is foolish. They think they've got a fish on a hook. When the second bid came in at $161, we were exonerated. At that point, the client said, my contractor was about to screw me. And I loved him so much. I loved his work. And I said, well, that was your problem. You were overlooking at him while he was working on other jobs, and you saw that craftsman work that he was doing, high quality work, and he interpreted that as he had a job at any price. So that turned out not to be true. What he failed to know is that you had a bid already for $159, and that's the game we're playing. If he'd have come in at $175, that still would have been a good bid, and maybe it's worth it for his extra workmanship. If anybody came in at $145, I would be suspect that they did not catch something, or they did not understand something, or they forgot to put their profit and overhead into it. One thing with the FHA 203K bidding is that we have to bid with each line item has profit and overhead built into the line item. So that in itself is a little unusual. So we want to be sure and let everybody understand what it is we're doing. Make sure that we have that profit and overhead in each line item. Now, many, many, many contractors will bid, and at the end of their bid, say 10% profit, X number of dollars, 10% overhead, some of them 15% overhead, depending on where they're from. And when they do that separately, hey, you consultants that are listening today, and after this week's calls that we got, I know there's a bunch of you listening, and I appreciate it. But our software, with a click of a button, we can add that 10%. And spread it across all those items. So if you're using our software, merely get into the inspection tab, and right at the very top of the page, it says profit and overhead. Just click on that button and a little box will drop down, and you plug in the percentage, 10%, 10%, and hit calculate, and it will spread that profit and overhead onto each line item so it's where it belongs. And that's pretty cool. It saved me a lot of headaches over the years. So, let's see. When I take on an associate and they provide a sample of the work write-up, so many of them lack substance. Now, I'm not saying I'm better than anybody else. That's not what I'm saying here at all. But you should be following the guideline. Most of what I'm seeing lately of the newer people that are getting in the business, they may have been told, hey, you can upsell the home inspection. Well, you can. The FHA requires a home inspection, whether you do it or not. Okay, but if you're not going to provide one, then you're not following the guideline. Now, it doesn't have to be your full-blown home inspection, which could take up to 3 or 4 hours to do. It can be the lightweight 203K. Type inspection, which you're just looking for health and safety issues. You're looking for what condition is this house in this category at the time I made my inspection. So masonry might say something as simple as There's a concrete perimeter foundation with pier and post center supports, and everything appears adequate. And that is enough for what our purposes are. But if you say there's something that is faulty, something that's broken, then you definitely want to put a fix in there for it right then. Most of what I see from these guys is just a scope of work, a recap of the subtotals, and some of them have a homeowner contractor agreement, most don't. And the last thing is allowable fees agreement, which HUD called the consultant agreement, and that's what we call it when we do our job too. The lender has a responsibility to provide all related contracts to the borrower prior to closing and in time for the borrowers to read and understand it prior to that closing. Well, we don't rely on the home or the lender to do that. We have incorporated that into our consultation. And instead of just handing the people, our clients, a bunch of papers to read and understand, we actually go over the things that are most commonly misunderstood so that we have a better chance of a smooth project going through from there forward. I'm looking at the clock, and it looks like we're heading up against a hard break. So, again, we'll be right back after this short break. Call us to be part of the show at 888-627-6008. So we'll be right back after this short break.
Thinking of becoming a 203K consultant? Contact us to see if you qualify. Home inspectors, contractors, architects, and engineers most likely qualify. Create an additional profit center using your existing knowledge base. For more information, visit 203ksoftware.com, and you'll be glad you did.
Hey, we're back with you. Thank you for hanging there with us. If you want to be part of the show, call in at 888-627-6008. We enjoy the questions that come from our customers and people in the public, because quite often you're not the only one with that question. Whether you're a consultant or a homeowner, a buyer, if you're thinking about buying a house, or if you're a realtor and you want to know, can you do something with it? So getting back to where we were, we try to minimize with our consultation. We read those contracts and explain where the most misunderstood items are, and we mark them up so that you can go back. The client can go back later and find them easily. So, yeah, he said this was always a problem. So I want to be sure and read this a little more than most. Okay. The biggest problem that we have, most common one, is the borrower tends to want to change the scope of work without authorization. Well, doing work that isn't on the original scope of work is a change. And twice in the paperwork, you signed, the homeowner signs, saying that they will agree that they will not make any changes in the scope of work, or on the second page it says in the architectural exhibits. Well, if you read the detail of that, everything we do is part of the architectural exhibits, even if there's no blueprints involved or moving of walls. Years ago, we had a contractor that showed up for his first day of work when the borrower met him and told him, scrap all that scope stuff. I want a pony wall built right here to kind of differentiate the kitchen from the living room. Just a little pony wall, just, you know, 4 foot deep and 4 foot high right here by the stove. And of course, you know, the contractor would normally say, well, whatever you say, you're the boss. Well, that's not true with an FHA 203K or a home style or the VA renovation project product. So this particular contract knew the rules. He'd done a few two or three Ks, and he called me immediately, and we got it nipped in the bud really fast. I told him to stick with all the things on the scope. I'll talk to the client, and we'll see if we can't get this worked out. We may very well be able to do that Pony Wall 4, but it's not going to be the first thing we do. So you have your scope. Get busy on your scope. And for 3 days, he was screamed and yelled at the whole time he was working because she wouldn't listen and do the work that he was scheduled to do first. We can only do change orders like that once 90% of the original scope of work is done. Now, if it was something that couldn't be done later because it would be undoing something else, we can ask permission from the lender to do that. But one of the worst things you can do is spend all your contingency money in the first week and then have a problem later that you don't have the money to fix. And that happens as well. Listen to your consultant. We go back to when you do these 203Ks, they all have a requirement of a contingency reserve. So that contingency reserve can be 10%, 15%, or 20%. Okay, it's 10% if all the utilities are on and working and you can check everything and you know there's no leaks. The water's on and there's no leaks, no water squirting anywhere, so that seems to be an okay system. Electric is on. All the light switches work. All the light fixtures work. Oh, somebody stole all the bulbs. So you don't know if they work, do you? But you can assume they do at this point. And that can be a legitimate, if we find one that doesn't work, then that can be a legitimate change down the road. It's for things you didn't know ahead of time. Well, that pony wall, we didn't know ahead of time, but it's not of necessity. It's not going to change the value of the house one iota. So you can't just change the scope of work without going through the change order process. And I'll tell you right now, I've got a couple of them where the client has said, oh, can I make this change? And I said, yes, after 90% of the original scope of work is done, and we have money, and it's clear we're not going to use it, and we don't have any need for it, then, yes, you can do that change order. And we write it up and send it to the lender and let them approve it. More and more lenders are wanting to approve it. In the past, practice has always been that the consultant represents the lender and was always normally able to make that decision in the field on behalf of the lender. But more and more we're seeing the lenders want to approve that. The problem is they want a signed change order. And as a consultant, if we sign it, that means it's done. So I won't sign it. I'll send it in with the homeowner and a contractor signature and explain that this has not been done yet. We're asking permission to do this. And if you give us that permission, you will see my signature once it's complete. So typically, any changes must be first brought to the inspector so he can create the proper change order documentation, get an invoice or an estimate, a bid, if you will, on that change from the contractor. Why is that important? Well, it's important because if without that bid, contractors typically look at change orders as golden. They're on the job, they're doing the work, and you ask for them to do a change. Contractors will quite often, they will quite often bid that item very high. Maybe twice what it's worth. Maybe 1.5 times what it's worth. Because chances of you bringing another contractor in to do that little item are few and far between. So it's not a good thing, but by giving an estimate ahead of time, it gives us / the inspector a chance to look at what he's doing and the price that he's charging for it and see that it's a reasonable price for what he's talking about. Changes to the scope of work. Changes can only be made for health, safety, or of necessity before that 90% completion date. Now, what is health and safety? Well, that's pretty simple. If it affects health or safety, we're going to fix it. If we didn't see the mold in the closet and we didn't put a repair in for it, now we do, that's clearly a safety or health issue. We didn't notice that the gate had fallen off from the time we inspected until it actually closed escrow, and now there's nails sticking out all over the gate that's half up and the other half is dilapidated or fallen on the ground. That's a safety issue. We can fix that gate. And the other one, of necessity. What could of necessity mean? Well, what it means is, as that contractor is removing the kitchen cabinets, as an example, and some of the drywall is rotted in there, and that drywall comes apart, and he looks into the wall and sees a whole bunch of damage, a dry rot damage to the framing. It is against the law to close that wall with that rot in there. So he has to fix it. He has no choice. And that is of necessity. We can't just arbitrarily close it up without making that repair. I live up in the mountains and my ears are plugging up. Anyway, anything that is unforeseen. In other words, you can't just leave something that you know needs fixing alone and then add it to contingency later because it was foreseen. You saw it and it needs to be added. But some of the things that you can add, any framing damage, of course, by termites or other wood-destroying organisms that require repairs is acceptable under the of necessity. The pony wall is not. It's a desired change, but it's not of necessity. So once 90% of the original scope of work is complete and there's no reason to expect the contingency will be needed, you might cover some of these desired changes. I remember doing a job in Concord, California years ago, and the contractor was a consultant. But he was acting as the contractor on this particular job. And we came in there and he's got this billing and it just happened to be the exact amount of the contingency. I said, "What's this billing for?" He says, "We upgraded the cabinets to a higher grade." And so I looked at the cabinets and there was still a tag on the back of them that indicated they were exactly the grade that I required in this scope of work. And I said, "Well, what about this? This is exactly what I required. So there's no upgrade here that I see." Oh, he says, "Don't worry about it. I'll find something else and bill it." His object was, his ethic was that contingency money was his. You remember I told you contingency money is money that every contractor has always forever built into his bid. And it's hidden there. He doesn't identify it. Under this program that we have, we identify the contingency separately so that if it's not used, it belongs to the homeowner, not the contractor. And that's the way it is. Okay, once the consultant completes his initial inspection and consultation, the loan closes, then the consultant changes hats. Where's my hat? Oh, there's my hat. He changes hats and becomes the inspector for the project. This is my inspector hat for those of you who can see me. Once the consultant completes that identification, becomes a draw inspector. That doesn't mean they become the job superintendent or the job supervisor. That remains the responsibility of the borrower and the contractor. The borrower is the contractor's boss. The consultant works exclusively for the borrower when he does the consultation. Once the loan closes, he ceases working exclusively for the homeowner, and he works for the lender as the lender's representative in the field and in the homeowner and HUD's best interest. So we're not going to sign something off that we don't feel is complete as indicated in the scope of work. All right, so at no time does the inspector, us in that case, the slash consultant, become the superintendent of the job. So the reason I'm making a point of this is I can't tell you how often we get calls from the homeowner and say, Mr. Young, you're not being sure the contractor's out here every day. And I said, and what makes you think I should be doing that? Well, you should see that he's not here every day, and you should call him and tell him to get out here. And I said, well, number one, once a loan closed, my responsibility is not to ever be the contractor's boss. I'm not there every day. The consultant comes out, or should come out, once every 30 days. And that can be 31 or 29 or more often as needed by the for cash flow from the contractor. So if he's got a big concrete pour and the 30 days is up and the concrete pour happens a week later, he may very well want us back out there in 2 weeks so he can pay for that concrete and the labor to put it in. But as a minimum, the homeowner is responsible. The homeowner is the person seeing the house every day. The homeowner knows, is a contractor showing up to work or not? And if he's not, the homeowner should let the contractor know, what the heck is going on? I want somebody out here working. Because the contract you signed that we provided with the FHA 203K project says that you are going to have somebody out here every day until this job is finished. So if you're not doing that, you're not doing your part. Now, we tell our clients, if you will send him that note in writing via email and copy us, I'll be happy to ask the question as well. Hey, what's going on? Is there an issue? Why aren't you out there? But just to call the contractor when I don't know the facts and they're not in writing, I'm not going to do that. That's not our job. It's not in our job's description. The homeowner is the boss of the contractor. All right. At no time will the consultant take charge of that. If they are, they're just foolish. We do have some foolish consultants around, inspectors, and they actually do take on more than they should from time to time. And I think we all do. We're just trying to be helpful. But this is one. Another misconception the borrower has at times: the contractor's crew doesn't show up to work for several days and might get a call from the borrower telling us that we aren't doing our job. Well, it isn't our job. Again, we're there monthly to check to be sure the project is moving forward. We had one not too long ago in Vallejo, California. It was probably a 30-day to 60-day project. If somebody knew what they were doing, they could get in and out of there in 30 days. And that's the way it should have happened. Contractor came in on day one and tore out everything in the bathroom because it was a bathroom remodel. He tore everything out and set it out in the hall on top of the hardwood flooring that we were not replacing. So now he's got all these scratch marks and everything in the hallway floor that he's going to have to figure out how to get rid of. And then we didn't see him again for 30, 45 days. At that point, maybe 60 days into the project, the owner I called to say, I said, you got to have a draw inspection here pretty quick. You're well overdue. And he said, well, he hasn't done anything. He tore the bathroom out and left it there. I haven't seen him. I said, well, call him and tell him, find out what's going on. Or email him and I'll help you find out. So he emailed the contractor and said, we need you to get on this job. Contractor was kind enough to respond by email and tell us that it was just no way that I'm going to do that job right now. I'm too busy. But it's only a 30-day job. And the lender told me we have up to 6 months to get the project finished. So I'll be out there in the fifth month, and I'll knock that thing out in a couple weeks. Lordy, lordy, lordy. Needless to say, I called the lender, and I said, did you tell the contractor he has 6 months to get this project done? And he says, yeah, he does. I said, no. If you'll look at the consultation report that I turned in, I gave him 60 days to finish this project. But because you had loose lips, they just sunk this ship. So we ended up firing the contractor and bringing in a new contractor who knocked this thing out in about 3 weeks. So you got to be sure your contractor's aware of that agreement that he signs as well. Oh, I think we're running a little over. So we're going to go to a break here and then be right back with you. Or call in and be on the show if you want to at 888-627-6008. We'll be right back after this short break.
We know which lenders are all talk and which ones can actually close your loans faster. You can depend on our consultants for the facts before you choose a lender. There are many lenders who will tell you they need 60 to 90 days to close a renovation loan. Those aren't the ones to choose. A 203K can close as fast as a 203B, unless the lender is trying to play all the possible positions on the field. The 203K is a team sport, and you should have the team members that know what to do. If your LO is constantly calling the consultant to see how is it going, you may want to reevaluate that member. Each member has a job. Let them perform their part while you perform yours. The countdown doesn't start until the lender gets your financial information. Visit 203K911.com. We know what to do.
This is Mike Young. We're back with you. Sorry we took that last segment. It was a little long. If you want to be part of the show, call in at 888-627-6008. Just looking at what's happening in the industry. Next week, we're going to be talking about how you can close your 203K loan faster. We're going to give you some tips on how to build your team and find that team that can close these loans as fast as a 203B. So, getting back to our subject, how many draw inspections can you have on an FHA 203K project? This has been a misconception for the past 10 years or so. It wasn't a problem from 1994 till about the year 2000. Then somebody misread the guideline, and they were in charge. And this started the misconception. Oh, this has been one of my pet peeves for years. In 2014, they were redoing the HUD guideline and coming up with the handbook 4000.1. And that's what we use currently today. So as they did, I got a phone call from my boss at HUD in Washington, D.C., and they were talking, I'm not going to say he or she, they were talking about the guideline and preparing the book. And I asked that they please add something in the guideline that allows us to enforce the fact that we can use more than five draws. And their response to me shocked me and set me back on my heels when they said, why would we do that? You can only have five draws on a 203K. That's the guideline. Blow me over. So what I did, I said, can you show me in the guideline where it might stay that? And of course they couldn't. So I did. I said, I'll tell you what's your email address? And I'm going to send you that part of the guideline that you just quoted. And I sent it to the HUD representative. And all of a sudden they said, yep, there it is right there. No more than 5 draws are allowed. When I asked, what school did you go to that taught you to start reading a sentence in the middle? So at that point, they read the entire sentence, and the entire sentence said, on a project of $10,000, no more than 5 draws are allowed. So we hope to see you next Sunday, 1 to 2. We're going to post our outline of the next show by Wednesday on our website at my203kconsultant.com. And then just click on the radio icon, the radio show up button, and you'll see our outline for next week's show. And from hereafter, we're going to start having an outline posted there for you to help you follow along with our thinking and get your questions ready in advance if you should have them. And please feel free to join us. We love input from the audience. Call 888-627-6008. Toll free to be part of the program. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
Tune in every Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time to BBS Radio Station 1 and learn more about making home renovations possible, profitable, and hassle-free. Isn't it time you learned how to make money doing something you loved? Visit 203konline.com now and let's get your home makeover projects done right.